T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back here to 560 WQAM. Greg Likens alongside Ira Winterman filling in for Hawk and Crowder. Alex Solano with us as well on the other side of the glass as we kick off this 4 o'clock hour. As a big game tonight, you can be heard right here on 560 WQAM between the Blues and the Bruins. Bruins lead the series 2-1 in the Stanley Cup Finals. For more on that, we go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Buy now and save big during the grand reopening of the all-new Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. Welcome in Steve Goldstein, television voice of the Florida Panthers, and of course covering the Stanley Cup Finals for Westwood One Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at Goldie on Ice. Goldie, appreciate your time. How's everything going today?
Doing well, Greg. What's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing great, and Ira and I are excited about this game for tonight as you're in St. Louis to call the action. I got to ask you, because you take a look at St. Louis hosting the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time since 1970. I know they had the game there on Saturday night, but what is the atmosphere like there in that town?
Yeah, it has been wild. And, you know, this weekend was also Cubs-Cardinals here. So, you know, people come from, you know, hours away. There's probably 30-40% Cubs fans that come to the Cardinals game. So this weekend has been nuts. It settled down a little bit today with that series ending. But, you know, most people in their lifetime, last time they played a Stanley Cup final was 1970. So there's a ton of people that never, you know, have never even experienced it before. It was a big letdown on Saturday night because the Blues were never really in the game. They fell behind early, but the atmosphere in the city is great. It's all anybody's talking about. They got some of the statues, you know, downtown of famous people, and they've thrown Blues jerseys on them. So this town is really on fire for this team.
You know, Goldie, it's interesting because I was actually watching that Cubs-Cardinal game yesterday, and I was kind of surprised with only one day off between games, and there is Craig Berube sitting in the stands watching the game, yeah, being interviewed on TV. I know some famous broadcasters were there also. I even turned to my son and I said, am I misreading this situation? Or if I'm down 2-1 and there's only one day off between games, and again, maybe I'm thinking you can over-scheme this or whatever, should I have been a little bit surprised that Craig Berube is taking in a rather lengthy baseball game when he has something a little bit more important going on tonight?
Well, you know, I was there also.
Yes.
Now, I was across the street, so you can watch the game kind of for free, and you're just hanging out in the restaurants and stuff. So that's where I was, to be the full disclosure.
Okay.
But, you know, but first they covered practice. They practiced in the morning. So
okay,
Berube got all that out of the way, did all the media stuff, the team practice, and I'm thinking he probably didn't stay the whole game. He went over there to do a little TV hit on,
okay,
Sports Midwest. He is such a regular guy, Ira.
Yes.
You know, he's still officially the interim coach, even though, you know, they're in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Right.
Now that deal will get done. It's a foregone conclusion. He has stayed in the office with the assistant coaches. He never even moved into the head coach office. So
wow,
he's still in the office with the assistants and never has taken the parking spot that the head coach has at the arena. So that thing has been empty since November. He's a regular dude. It's pretty close by. So I'm guessing he just, you know, quickly walked over to Busch Stadium, did the interview, and probably went home after that.
Okay. So I'm driving around, I'm listening to you between periods, doing all the hosting, Kenny Albert mentioning your name the entire time. And yet, no offense, Goldie, I don't think you have to be the most hockey expert analyst to figure out that if the other team is going 4-for-4 on the power play, it's probably a really, really, really good idea not to get penalties. I understand one of them was on the challenge on the offside. They fell down 3-0. You have to take that chance. I could see it. It was obviously a very close and very tight play. I'm glad to say my neighbor, Pierre Resico, who lives in Weston with me, got the call correct upon review. Good job, Pierre. Question, Goldie, the penalties being taken by the Blues, are they being forced into it by a more talented, harder skating team? Or when you watch the game and sit there while the play-by-play is going on, is St. Louis just simply being too liberal with the penalties, knowing what the ultimate penalty for them has been with the Bruins' power play goals?
Well, first off, it's a lot of what everybody's talked about and talked about this morning. Craig Berube actually came out and said he disagreed with some of the calls.
Okay.
Now, I'm usually not a fan. You know what that usually means in series when teams start complaining about officials? It means they're in some trouble. Now, I'm not saying that's the case, but I'm a little surprised. Because as you said, look, first of all, the Bruins get 4 power play goals on 4 shots.
Right.
That's it. So much like that last series when they blew that call on Joe Pavelski against Vegas, and Vegas, you know, wound up giving up the four power play goals in the 5-minute major and wound up losing game seven. You know, you do have an option of doing a good job in the penalty kill and actually killing them off.
Yes, that would help.
I'm not a big fan of blaming the refs. The one, as you said, it was on a challenge, so that's totally their fault. So then you're down to three penalties in a Stanley Cup final playoff game. I mean, a couple of them were questionable that were 50-50s. Those things happen. One of them was a really stupid penalty by David Perron.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't see – no, I don't think the Bruins are totally forcing them into it, nor do I think the Blues had an incredible problem of being undisciplined, because like I said, there was one bad penalty by Perron. One of them was on the lost challenge, which results in a penalty, and the other two were just close calls. So, you know, I think it's one of those things, Ira, where because Boston was so efficient on their power play,
mm-hmm.
that the officials are being talked about probably a little bit more than, in my opinion, they should be after game three.
Steve Goldstein, television voice of the Florida Panthers and covering the Stanley Cup Finals for Westwood One Radio, joining us here on 560 WQAM. You can hear that courtesy of Westwood One Radio tonight right here on QAM. And Goldie, I got to ask you to try to play psychologist here, I suppose. What is Jordan Binnington's psyche after being pulled from the game on Saturday night? And it sounds like they're going to go with him tonight, but what does that situation look like for the Blues?
Well, never a question. They were going with him, according to Berube. And this guy, let's keep in mind, he is 12-2 this year, which is his career because he's a rookie. 12-2 the game after losses. So he's got this dry kind of, you know, personality to him. Really never flinches. Now, he had never been pulled in a game. So this game, this loss that he suffered the other night and this bounce back game is a little different. I can tell you this, though, at that practice yesterday, most of the regular guys were not on the ice. It was just the scratches. Binnington was out there with the goalie coach. They were working on technique and all these different things, you know, sliding around the net. It was very businesslike for about 20 straight minutes. So based on his past, I got to expect the guy is going to come back and have the nerves of steel that he's always had. Again, you know, that's incredible. 12-2 after losses for a rookie goaltender. That includes the playoffs this year.
Do you think if Jake Allen, who was not very good when he came in, was better, that there could have been any type of controversy there? Or do you think with the remarkable job that Binnington did to get him there, that that wasn't a case? Or if Jake Allen was better, might we be talking something a little different tonight?
No, I think there was zero chance, Ira. First off, even if he was better, the game was 5-1 when they put him in. So there's no pressure on you, you know, when you're coming into that situation. This is the guy, and they're certainly not going to let one bad game. And by the way, he had other questions, like game one against San Jose wasn't very good. Now, he didn't get pulled,
right?
But he came back in one game, too. Zero debate. They're going to sink and or swim the next week, week and a half, as long as they're in this thing against Boston with Binnington in goal.
When you look at this series, obviously you're looking at one overtime goal, or you're looking at a team possibly looking to complete a sweep tonight. Does this series seem that lopsided to you, that the Bruins are one overtime goal allowed in game two from a sweep? Or maybe is that just the pedigree of these teams, that the Bruins are just a lot better?
I don't think the Bruins are a lot better. Now, I think Tuukka Rask has been much better than Binnington so far. He's going to have to be better. But, you know, remember this. That game two goes to overtime only because Rask was great in the second and third period. The Blues were all over them. The Blues dominated that game. Now, in game three, for some inexplicable reason, they got totally away from their heavy north-south game. They started trying to make fancy passes. I don't know if it was because they were home. It was the first cup final home game in 50 years in St. Louis. They were trying to put on a show. But they got totally out of their game plan. And obviously, it cost them big time. They were down before you blinked the eye, and that was the end of the game. I fully expect the Blues are going to play a lot better tonight. Now, is it going to be enough to win? That's a question mark, but it would not surprise me if later tonight this series is 2-2 and it's down to a best of three. St. Louis has come back many times during the playoffs.
So if we get to a situation where the Bruins are on the verge and we start talking about the Conn Smythe, Torrey Krug right now or Tuukka, or where does it sort of stand with you?
That's a great question. I mean, Krug has been unbelievable, and the game the other night was historic. You know, four points, four power play points, 4 points by a defenseman. You don't see it very often. You know, Rask might be the guy.
Really?
It's a great question. You know, Bergeron has to be in the conversation, I think, Ira. You know, it depends on if you just look at numbers or if you remember, you know, they were down in the Toronto series, and Rask had a win you know, game six in Toronto to stay alive, and then they came back and won game seven. And they were also down against Columbus. Remember, the Blue Jackets were
right.
2-1, and they went on that long winning streak. Carolina had a few games, even though that series was a sweep, where they put big pressure on, and Rask was great. So if Tuca's able to get this done, and particularly if one of these games, if Boston does win two more, and one of them, he stands on his head and wins it, I probably favor Rask, but it's one of those things where you could have two, three different guys that you wouldn't have a huge argument with for Conn Smythe playoff MVP.
Steve Goldstein, television voice of the Florida Panthers, covering the Stanley Cup Finals for Westwood One Radio, joining us here on 560 WQAM. Goldie, one of the few, I guess you call it, highlights from Saturday night for St. Louis Blues fans, I suppose, is that Patrick Mahomes was there and he was chugging beer. When did this become the trendy thing for celebrities, and I guess specifically football players, to do? Because it feels like now any of these football players who show up to playoff games in hockey or in basketball, it's like if they don't chug a beer, then it's a disappointment.
Well, of course, it starts with the offensive lineman, right? Remember a few years ago when the Predators were in it, the Tennessee Titans offensive line, those guys were showing up and they were trying to chug them and it was spilling all over the place. And then in San Jose this year, you had the O-line from the 49ers coming to the games. So then, of course, you had that Bucks game where, you know, the one guy chugged it and then Aaron Rodgers didn't. And I think that's what really brought it on. So Mahomes couldn't let Aaron Rodgers, you know, look, he had something he could outdo him on, so he threw it down. I think it's just been an evolution, and now it's just a thing that you got to throw it down. I think since Aaron Rodgers didn't, they're trying to make sure that they best him. So I think it's now a thing, yes.
Okay, so you're on. I got to get your quick question on the Panthers. I'm curious about this. The NBA draft is June 20th, the NHL draft the 21st. I don't mean to put you on the spot. I'm sure you haven't done the intense scouting that I have on the NBA side, but I go to NHL.com. I'm looking to see who the Panthers are going to take at number 13. All four of their experts are lined up saying Spencer Knight, USHL player, commit to Boston College. The fact that everyone is listing a goalie, you and I spoke about this last week at Memorial Day as far as Montembeau and his future and Luongo moving into a 20-game situation maybe, Bobrovsky possibly coming here. Does it make sense for you, even with Montembeau in the system, to go and use that number 13 pick on another goalie?
Well, it would make sense to me because they've really, besides Montembeau, and I think he's the third drafted or fourth drafted Panther goalie ever to play a game in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
So the history has not been very good. And if you can go get a prospect like that, great. Now, the caveat in that would be, Ira, if they do, and they probably won't know, they won't know on draft day, but if you know you're going to sign Bobrovsky, and
right.
you do have Montembeau, and they've also got another guy they drafted a few years ago, which seems like a great draft pick, a seventh rounder out of Bowling Green. This guy had a great year, and they've signed him, Ryan Bednard. You know, you now have, if you do sign the veteran Bobrovsky, and you have Montembeau, and you have this other guy, Bednard, who's actually, I think, a year older than Montembeau, you know, do you really need to use a first rounder on a goalie, on a guy that's not going to have an impact for 2 or 3 years, or do you want to either get a player maybe that can play for you sooner, which is probably unlikely at that point, or mm-hmm. trade the pick and, you know, go and get somebody. So, you know, look, these drafts, you never want to be too short-sighted, especially in the NHL, where
right.
after the top few, guys aren't going to play immediately. It's a down-the-road thing. I don't have a problem if they keep the pick and draft a guy that is probably not going to play in the league for a few years. The goalies are kind of like quarterbacks. You can never have too many because you've got great value. So let's say you hit on all of them
mm-hmm.
and you have too many, you can go trade those guys for players, for picks, anytime you want. So very intriguing to me. I will tell you this, though. It would not shock me if they think they've got, you know, something done with Bobrovsky, which, again, they won't know before the draft.
Right.
If they wound up trading that pick. And if you can get good value and get a player that can help you now, it wouldn't totally shock me if they wind up, you know, moving the pick. But it wouldn't shock me if they took the best goalie out there, that kid Spencer Knight is supposed to be anyway, a guy down the road that's going to be really good. But it's not for a few years. It's
just trying to help with your draft scouting. I know you're out on the road. It's been tough. So I'm just trying to do the little part that I could. And you know what? It was an English name. I was able to pronounce it, so why not?
Well, that'll be easy if they, like last year, they picked Denisenko, you know, the kid out of Russia who doesn't speak any English. That's really long-term. So I appreciate you doing the homework. It's more homework than I've done. You're 1,000% right.
And today I also learned for the Sun Sentinel how to spell Rui Hachimura, so I'm just feeling good about myself.
Oh, boy. Don't question us on that.
Hey, Goldie, hope the broadcast goes well tonight, and enjoy the remainder of the Stanley Cup Finals as Game 4 can be heard right here on 560 WQAM. Goldie's going to be part of the Westwood One radio broadcast. We appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Always appreciate it. Ira, Greg, take care.
Thanks, right, Goldie. Enjoy the game.
Steve Goldstein, of course, television voice of the Florida Panthers, and you can hear him covering the Stanley Cup Finals tonight on Westwood One Radio. There you go. So we got a little draft insight in there as well for the Florida Panthers.
You got to get it in there. I didn't realize. I forgot that the NHL draft was the day after the NBA draft, so it really is draft time. So I will, as soon as I'm done with my NBA mock, I will get my NHL mock up as soon as I can.
Okay. You're going to work ahead for the WNBA draft for next year, too?
Yeah, I might hold back on that. That's after I'm done watching my replay of the AHL, the Calder Cup series. Yeah.
All right, Ira, let's take a timeout. When we come back, big heavy developments in the heavyweight division of boxing over the weekend. We want to get into that and discuss next here on QAM. Radio.com. Radio.com. The 2019 hurricane season has arrived, and once again, WQAM is combining with the team at CBS4 to bring you extensive coverage from watch to warning to landfall to recovery. Keep it tuned to WQAM for up-to-the-minute news and tips should a hurricane approach. Hurricane coverage on WQAM is sponsored by BNT Services, protecting you with PGT Impact windows and doors. Be informed during this hurricane season from CBS4 and AM560 and 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Welcome back here to 560 WQAM. Greg Likens alongside Ira Winderman, filling in for Hawk and Crowder here on this Monday. Hope everybody had a terrific weekend. While we're talking about the news channel, just for a moment, Ira, I do want to make mention of this because I know that some people have texted in about it, see it certainly on social media. Some sad news to pass along as a longtime Local 10 news anchor and reporter Todd Tongan has passed away at the age of 56. And he'd been with WPLG for more than three decades. At this point in time, we don't know the cause of death. We just know that he had been out of town, or his wife had been out of town, excuse me, and was unable to reach him. And they contacted a friend, and then the police were called, and then they found him. And unfortunately, he had passed away. So we don't know the cause of death, but certainly, listen, Ira, you've been in South Florida for longer than I have. So, you know, Todd Tongan, I know, as a lot of these TV personalities do, they become part of your everyday viewing. They become kind of part of your family. And so it's certainly sad news for everybody.
The 10 Taxi he's best known for in his celebrity interviews. But you always look at people in the industry and say to yourself, every time you see them, they're enjoying their job. And that's sort of the lesson you take away from cases like that. When you could look at someone, I always thought that Todd was enjoying his job. Look, we've seen plenty of people in the news business. It's a tough business, and being in the broadcast business. And yet, whether it was doing the early shift on a weekend and doing the early news there, he just always seemed like he wanted to be there, like he was enjoying himself. And that's something that I don't think you can manufacture. I think that's something real, whether it's on radio or television, that this guy is enjoying what he's doing. And that, to me, made it even the more sad that that's the special kind of person you enjoy on weekends waking up to and seeing do the news and just realizing sort of that there was a sort of joy of life there. And I think that's what makes it particularly sad. And like you said, when you grow up as part of a community and someone sort of enters your life like that, I think it makes this a particularly sad time.
Yes, I agree. And so thoughts and prayers with him, his family, and anybody who's affected, certainly those who worked with him at WPLG. And I know that there's been a lot of tributes being paid to him on social media. So I wanted to get serious there for a moment, just because I think that is something that's very important for our community.
And part of our lives, so I agree.
Yes. All right. Can't promise we're going to stay serious, though, as this segment goes along, because, Ira, you know what? This is interesting. I don't know about how you are. I'm not a huge boxing fan.
Right.
I'm not a huge MMA fan either, but if there's a big marquee event, then I pay attention. If there's some, you know, two fighters are going to square off, then I'm all in on it. However, like this weekend, to me, nothing had registered that there was going to be a big match in the boxing ring.
Right, because there wasn't.
Until the result occurred.
Yes.
So I wasn't really paying attention. And all of a sudden, I get an alert on my phone. And I'm looking and I'm like, wait, is that the same Anthony Joshua that I think it is? Right. I had to like do a double take because I thought the only way that Anthony Joshua may lose a fight is if he's facing Tyson Fury or Deontay Wilder. And those fights aren't happening this past weekend. Instead, it's Andy Ruiz Jr. who shocks Anthony Joshua in the seventh round with a knockout on Saturday night to take his three heavyweight belts. And it was at Madison Square Garden, sold out. And before we get into some of the dynamics at play here and the after effects and the reaction,
right.
I do think the buildup and the context of this, which I don't think a lot of people are paying attention to, really, really makes this an even better story, is that Anthony Joshua is a fighter from the UK. He's
right.
immensely popular overseas. And DAZN, which is this new up-and-coming network,
yes.
had wanted him to make an impact on the American audience. So they said, hey, we're going to make this fight. We want it at Madison Square Garden. It's sold out. And then Ruiz has to step in because you had two other fighters, one fighter in New Yorker, a fellow New Yorker who would have been really a hit there
a draw,
at Madison
right.
Square Garden, mm-hmm. Jarrell Big Baby Miller, was bounced from the fight because he failed like four different drug tests. So it was like they tested
but
him
only
once.
Four, right.
Yeah, and
right.
three different substances in his body. So like, okay, this guy can't make the fight. And then Luis Ortiz passed down the fight. He said, no, I don't want to step in for Miller. And so then you've got Andy Ruiz, who's just sitting around, and he's like, all right, I'll take the fight. And he ends up as an 11-1 underdog and wins this one.
I've seen even longer odds. Folks, if you're driving, don't do this, please. But if you're somewhere and you can get to a computer, your phone, or something else, just type in Andy Ruiz Jr., and then when you get to the Google page, click on images. Here's the problem, Greg, okay? And you know this because you've been doing this now for quite some years. And things have changed over the years how you refer to someone who is heavyset, okay?
Right.
And you know this especially now because we get directives and things like that. There's a lot of issues with body shaming.
Yes.
So you have to be so careful in dancing around and using euphemisms, okay? But the folks, again, who are not driving, who are sitting in front of their laptops or their computers or their phone or their tablets, who now are looking at the first picture that I am on Google images of Andy Ruiz Jr., I'll give you, if you're driving, and please be safe, I'll give you probably as close as I can come, and some people might know this from a historical perspective, Butterbean. Remember Butterbean,
mm-hmm.
who was fighting and he went out there and you're going, what are you doing with that gut out there? I mean, it's just, my son came in the room, I was watching something, I think I was watching the hockey, he goes, Dad, you got to see this video. And he shows me the video at first, and it didn't register. I didn't realize that Ruiz had filled in on the fight. So we thought it was some type of undercard. I've covered a lot of boxing. I have covered a lot of those four-round preliminaries, where it's basically we're filling time, so the usher will fight next. So that's what this looks like. I mean, and then, matter of fact, another guy might be, I don't know, do you watch Breaking Bad?
I did not watch
There was
Breaking
the guy
Bad.
Named Huel who went to collect the money again. Another very large person. This, to me, if this is your sport, and this is your champion right now, it is a remarkable story how, look, you should not be able to get in the ring if you fail your drug test. Greg, I agree with that. You should not be able to get in the ring if you don't make weight, which is not an issue in the heavyweight division, but isn't anyone else. You should not be able to get in the ring if you make sexist or any other type of racial, you know, connotation jokes for some, you know, statement for someone like that. I'm not so sure if I am any boxing sanctioning body, and again, I know heavyweights can't be overweight, that this is the face of your sport right now. Because, again, you know, we have this debate all the time. You and I have discussed it. We discuss, is a golfer an athlete? Is someone who plays darts an athlete? Is a pool player an athlete? We talk about skill and all that. Please, if you're looking at your Andrew Ruiz Jr. picture right now, Greg Likens, I'm putting you on the spot. Is that an athlete?
Oh, man, he doesn't look like an athlete. I mean,
okay.
he looks to me like if you go to your local sports bar and you're sitting at the bar, he's the guy that sits next to you who orders extra chicken wings and too much beer. And then he decides he's going to go for a run or something and come back and eat some more.
Sure, like almost like Cheers, like it's Norm.
Yes.
Norm won the fight
as
on
if he's
Saturday.
He's the heavyweight champion of the world. Yeah, I mean, this guy doesn't look anything like an athlete. I have to be fair to him. Obviously, he was in better condition in terms of what his body can handle than Anthony Joshua.
Yes.
Right? And so, like,
Joshua was exhausted.
He
was fumes
absolutely
at the
exhausted.
End.
And Joshua, for those who don't know what he looks like a Greek god. He's got muscles chiseled all over the place. He looks like the guy you would want to have as your poster child as the heavyweight champion of the world, right? Because his physique is phenomenal.
The boxing poster we're all used to
yes.
with the two guys standing next to each other. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy looks like that's exactly what you'd be looking for. And Ruiz looks like some guy you just pulled off the couch from somewhere and say, hey, put these gloves on. You're around the right weight and just start swinging away and see what
again,
happens.
Yeah, not to be derogatory, but Andy Ruiz is almost the guy who showed up at Madison Square Garden and says, where do you want me to put these kegs? That's who expected.
Right.
Like he drove the beer truck or something like that. And you know what? And again, we got to be careful what you talk about because obviously he got the job done on a big stage in one of the greatest arenas ever. But where do you go now? In other words, his next fight, is it a sellable commodity right there?
I wouldn't think so. I will say this, though. It's the congratulations to him and to the country of Mexico. He's the first fighter of Mexican descent to be the heavyweight champion of the world. They've got excellent fighters in all the other weight classes. This is the first time they've had a heavyweight champion. But I'm with, like, Ira, I will say this. If anything comes out of it, this gives hope to chubby guys everywhere. Really.
Who can throw a punch? Who can pack a punch?
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
yes.
Now, this guy, obviously, he's got quick hands. Obviously, even though his body doesn't appear to be that of a tip-top shape athlete, he's in decent enough shape that he can go toe-to-toe.
Is he really? Or is it like what I said? We talk
about
skills.
His conditioning is good enough.
But is he skilled as opposed to an athlete? In other words, like we talk about the golfers, you know, or a pool player or something like that, where he has one particular skill. And yes, you could be a bouncer and have a great punch. We've seen plenty of larger bouncers mm-hmm. who aren't exactly athletes. But when I saw this, and I'm like, okay, Jake, yeah, that's the undercard. Let me know when the main fight is. And again, the problem with Dazn is you just don't notice it. It doesn't get the publicity. It's not promoted on ESPN. And it's like, oh, that's my... I mean, I think of the great heavyweight champions, whether it's the Frasers or the Alis, you know, or even in more recent years and what Mike Tyson did and someone like that. And now, we've always said this. We've always said the heavyweight champion by default is the face of boxing because mm-hmm. people like Goliath. Well, you got Goliath times whatever right here. That was just crazy. That was just crazy that could even happen.
Yes, it really was. And again, like for anybody who's upset that we're bringing up the way this guy looks, like you can't help it.
It's undeniable.
You can't help it.
It's undeniable again. And again, like with the whole body shaming and everything, I understand it shows what you can do at any body type when you said, you know, oh, come on, I'm just talking out of my whatever now because to me, this is unfathomable. Even when, look, the previous greatest boxing upset I recall, and I remember where I was that day, was when Buster Douglas beat mm-hmm. Mike Tyson. People forget that was the weekend, the only weekend ever that NBA All-Star Weekend was in Miami. So they had the dunk contest and everything on Saturday, and Harold Miner was there, and we were getting ready, and they were warming up for the All-Star game, and no one was talking about basketball. They were talking about this upset. But if you remember, Greg, what Buster Douglas looked like, he looked like a boxer. He had a boxer body. Okay, it made sense that
right.
Mike Tyson didn't train properly, which I'm sure is the case in this case also, and let his guard down. But at least someone who looks like a boxer won a boxing crown. This is just so different that, again, to me, the analogy keeps coming back to Butterbean, which is not fair to Ruiz, but I just don't know another direction to go right now.
Well, and so for anybody who's sensitive about this, this has nothing to do with fat shaming or anything like that. The way I look at this, Ira, is it's very matter of fact. If you look at those two guys standing in the ring next to each other,
right.
It's the classic case of don't judge a book by its cover. Because if you judge the books by its cover, then you'd say Anthony Joshua is going to win in a landslide. And you're right. I think that was his mindset. He took a look at his opponent. He said, okay, I don't have to train as hard. I don't have to take this seriously. He didn't even seem to be taking it seriously when he got knocked down.
Yes, when he kept smiling. He kept leading with his chin during
yes.
the fight. If you see it, it's kind of interesting. Dazn was so proud of having this unique moment that they posted on their Twitter the entire round, which usually you don't do when you're trying to
That's
get people for pay-per-views.
Yeah.
And like, wow, you're letting me see the whole flight, you know, fight. That's really nice. Of you people, I'll be glad to, but I still have trouble taking this serious, and I really am curious where it goes next. Here's my next question. You know what has followed, because I know people in the training industry. If a trainer went to you, and you're Ruiz, and he said, I can get you in great shape if you work at my gym, would you take that chance of what got you to the top And I don't, you fill in your lines there out there, folks. Or would you try to go ahead and shed those clearly 20, 30 extra pounds? I mean, you're talking about like two rolls there. But you are. What would you do now? Would you say, look, I'm not changing a thing. This got me to the World's Heavyweight Championship, or now I might have a chance to be something really special. What approach would you take?
I don't know. I mean, he may just be like, hey, I've gotten here. I'm the heavyweight champion of the world. I got three different belts. Why would I change what I'm doing? Listen, I don't think there's any denying that he's a good athlete. It's just a matter of that, like, most of the athletes that we come to look at in our sports universe, they're in better shape physically in terms of their outward appearance. It doesn't mean, like, heavier people or chubby people, they can be good athletes.
I love the euphemism. No, but we are dancing. Yeah.
No, it's true, right?
Right.
Yeah, just like, I even look, and we got a text about offensive linemen. Yeah, we got offensive linemen who are very varying shapes and sizes, but they have to be decent athletes if they're going to play in the NFL.
There's the one name we all know, so let's put it. This weekend, Andy Ruiz Jr. won the Bartolo Colon Heavyweight Champion. Right? Because Bart Colon is like nothing we've seen. Again, that's a skilled athlete, more of a skill than an athlete, what he does. So I guess maybe there's sort of a lineage there, and we could put that together. And I'll wait for Hawk to come back and put together his big four of those, his Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't wait to hear his take on all of this. Now, here is what I found to be maybe the most fascinating element to this story, other than the actual outcome of the fight.
Okay.
I was not aware of this until after the result. And of course, we always play the results. And that's the way our society works. And social media has these magic powers where it doesn't matter what's been posted, people dig it back up. And this, you didn't have to go back very far, but it was just over a month ago that Anthony Joshua voluntarily posted a picture on Twitter of himself next to a ring in which it looked like a facility where he had been practicing in anticipation for this fight. And it was a picture of him and Drake with a caption, quote, "about to break the curse, hashtag June 1st, end quote.
Yeah.
June 1st being the date of the fight, the curse being in reference to Drake. Anybody or any team that he's associated himself with, they end up losing or they don't do well in a championship round.
Which you might be seeing again, but okay.
So it's like, oh my gosh, Drake, who is at the forefront of attention right now in the NBA Finals with the Toronto Raptors Association, the Drake curse strikes in the boxing ring. How about that?
It's crazy. I guess the only good outcome of this is now going forward, as you saw on our show today from the WBA and WBC, the beer man will be going through the ring during the round also. So at least that's good.
Oh, my goodness. You know what's hilarious, Ira, is that we do have some people who are very upset about all this. It's like, I don't care like what shape or size you are out there in our audience.
Right.
First of all, thank you for listening. Second of all, anybody with any common sense can look at this and say, this appears to be a physical mismatch. But more power to Ruiz. He came through. He won the fight fair and square.
Literally more power to Ruiz,
but
yes.
But, like,
He did what he was assigned to do.
It does defy the odds, not just from, you know, what the odds makers say in Vegas, but just from everything that we're told about what a great athlete looks like and doesn't. It certainly defies anything like that. And that's why I think it's such an entertaining and fun story. And Ruiz seems like a really fun guy in terms of his character. If you just look at the way he carries himself, he even came to his press conference the next day and he was wearing a Knicks jersey at Madison Square Garden and all this stuff. So maybe the best publicity the Knicks have gotten in years.
Right? And he will be going third in the NBA draft on June 20th, yes.
Right. Oh, okay. We got a lot of people reacting to this. And it's, man, this is polarizing, isn't it? Solana, you see some people are really fired up on the text line.
Yeah, don't look to me for a lifeline over here,
Greg. No, I'm not looking at your lifeline.
I'm just trying to deal with euphemisms. Get the hell out of it. Isn't this segment over?
But I'm just imagining, like, if Solana was at the beach this past weekend and Andy Ruiz walked by, like, would you anticipate that guy was the heavyweight champion of the world?
No.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. I'll leave you alone. Let's take a quick timeout before we get into much trouble next. Come back here on QAM. Radio.com. Hey, join 560 WQAM at Channing Crowder at Twin Peaks in Pembroke Pines this Friday from 8 to 11 p.m. for a basketball finals watch party. Hang with Channing and watch game 4. Enjoy whiskey specials all night. And there will be plenty of cool giveaways. Twin Peaks, eats, drinks, and scenic views. Welcome back here to 560 WQAM. Greg Likens alongside Ira Winderman filling in for Hawk and Crowder on this Monday. Alex Solano with us as well as we continue on here. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can text us in the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line at 560-22, 560-22. All right, I'm not going to try to put you in a bad situation here, Ira, because everybody's getting uncomfortable at the end of that last segment. There are some people who do not like the fact we've been talking about Andy Ruiz and his physique, but we do have some people making some very valid points about it. One of our texters says that Ruiz is the real-life Rocky. Certainly still built differently. Somebody says, is it possible that this fight was rigged, that they threw the fight?
There's no reason to throw the fight for a charismatic champion-level fighter, for someone who raises questions about boxing at a time, well, as the ongoing MMA challenge to boxing. That would make zero sense. Believe me, I am sure that is a time when all the promoters could not believe the money that was going through their fingers, the possibility, whether it was a Fury fight or something like that, and what they had available. I was down at Miami Beach way back over the years, and Livingston Bramble and Hector Macho Camacho each were fighting separate fights. And the idea was, this was at the Abel Holtz Tennis Center of all places, that Bramble would win, Camacho would win, and then they'd fight each other in a huge fight. I believe at the time one was a Don King fighter, one was an Aaron fighter. And what happened was Camacho won his fight and Bramble lost, and Camacho's people were indignant and they were screaming at him in the trailer they had set up as a dressing room. You just cost us millions. You weren't prepared. You weren't ready. I see this more as that scenario. The heavyweight division finally got really interesting. Mm-hmm. Finally got back to a level where you said, well, now we have these protagonists. Now it's interesting, but in sort of a different way.
It really is. And you're right. We were building up to this really a wilder Joshua matchup. And there are all these, you know, politics behind the scenes. You had, you know, two different television rights that they're associated with. And so, you know, the promoters trying to get their cuts. And it's been it reminded me of, you know, the Mayweather Pacquiao and how long that eventually took to make. And it took so long to make that Pacquiao was past his prime by the time that fight actually happened, and it robbed the fans of what could have been a much better fight, a more competitive fight. And so it felt like the same thing was kind of happening here, and now this happens. And so in reading more about it, it does look like Ruiz automatically was in the contract. He is going to have a rematch against Joshua. So I think that's probably his next fight. If it's not that next fight, maybe fight somebody else that they think he can take out, and then he takes on Joshua.
Or that's his next fight and his last fight, yes. I mean, he seems almost like, when I'm going thinking about my lineage, you know what a better comparison I had? You know, probably a little before your time, but Chuck Wepner. Chuck Wepner was actually a beer delivery guy, and he got a chance to fight, I believe it was Tyson for the heavyweight championship, as this sort of Rocky out of nowhere, and then that ended in a hurry.
One of our texters makes a good point. I know dozens of super ripped people, and says, including his sister-in-law is a trainer. Many of them don't have an athletic bone in their body.
Okay.
I think that's a valid point.
I think that is also,
because there's a lot of these like Instagram models and stuff. They're posting pictures of themselves all the time. They've got great abs and they, you know, everybody looks good, men and women. And they make a lot of money off of the fact that they're in great shape. But then you get them on a basketball court or on a football field or, you know, baseball diamond, and they don't know what the heck they're doing.
So you're saying I'm overposting on Instagram. Okay. I will take that. It is. Look, all I'm saying is you can with that physique and body type, but you as every trainer would tell you, but you can better with a better physique and body type. That's all I'm saying. Yes, the body, look, this is what I'm going through right now in the NBA draft, and I see this all the time, and the scouts I talk to, you hear this all the time, Greg. Mm-hmm. He has an NBA body. Well, I've seen plenty of guys with NBA bodies who can't actually play the game of basketball,
right?
And that becomes a problem. This is true in all sports. You saw it in the NFL, NFL Network, they show it, they go to the combine, they're taking calibers and everything. He has an NFL body. The Dolphins have drafted some of them, and then you realize that's all well and good, but you can't. So I agree. I'm not saying just because you have the body, it makes you the athlete. No. I'm saying because if you have the right body, I really wish Zach Duarte was here, don't take this personally, it gives you that much more of an advantage.
Well, Zach Duarte is on steroids, so, you know, that's just...
Yeah, again, you know, I just thought those were vitamins, and
we joke with Zach, and I'm not trying to
alone
take a shot.
Not doing anything there, and if you have a pestle and mortar with you, so be it.
I can also confirm Zach Duarte, one of these guys, looks great, physique is amazing, has a terrible jump shot.
So there,
you
there
played
you
basketball with him?
0 of 15 he was from the three-point line in last year's Miami Heat media tournament.
coming up again soon, the end of the month.
Coming up again soon. I think he's on the roster. I will tell him he is not allowed to shoot.
You know what's interesting? I played in that a number of years back now, back when I first worked at QAM.
Right, when you weren't washed.
And no, I considered signing up for it this year, Solana, but I usually work on Saturday. So last I checked, they're not paying me to play for in the Miami Heat Media Challenge, right? So I'm going to get the paycheck as opposed to participate. But, yeah, man, I wish I could play in that. Now, you're calling me Wash. You're the guy who's 25 and says you're waking up and your bones are brittle and all this stuff.
Right, but when the adrenaline is flowing, Greg, uh-huh. just pass me the rock.
So, it sounds like, now, okay, this is taking a left turn. But Solana...
Shocking.
It's within the spirit of the show, right? You challenged Joe Rose to a tennis match.
Here we go.
And my sources are correct, you've played Ira in tennis as well.
I have, yeah.
Okay.
Those are the old guys who got some game.
Yeah. And so, you know, it sounds like you're asking for a beating on the basketball court.
I'll
give you that.
Look, tennis on clay, I might add, not my forte. Basketball, on the other hand, just pass me the rock.
That's your forte?
Pass me the rock, Greg.
Okay. You called me washed.
Yeah.
You've never seen me play before.
Never seen you play.
Okay.
Take it outside, boys. Hey, Take it outside, fellas.
All right. Well. I got it. Okay. You're getting my competitive juices flowing here.
I think you're going to skip your three-hour shift on 790 and play the Heat Challenge now.
No.
There will be blood.
I am not going to do that, but I will say, Solana, now we may have to set up some sort of one-on-one game or something.
In the parking lot.
Yeah. We'll just bring a hoop out here.
Or maybe the new station, they have a hoop there in the parking lot.
So. That would be fun.
Yeah, sure.
I already know what's going on here, okay? Greg, he's got some height on him. Right? Like I don't know exactly how tall you are,
but I'd say
6'2", 6'3", yeah. Right? So you have this confidence in you already because when you go play pickup basketball, wherever it is, because you're one of the taller people out there, you always get picked, whether it's first, second, third, right? Like I would definitely bet on that being the case. So you have this confidence that you're a great basketball player, but I can already tell you're all height, no skill.
Wow. Okay.
I kind of sit in between you guys now. Yeah, I'm kind of feeling kind of bad now.
Hold me back.
Although the one thing we know about Solana, if the sun's strong outside, he couldn't last because of his fair skin. So maybe there, that's the equalizer.
So you're saying I should just challenge him to
outdoor noon showdown. Right. Yes.
Noon in July. Yes. Okay. That's one way to.
And
to
I will say this in fairness to Solana. His strokes and the way he plays tennis is so much truer to the game of a true South American clay court player. I mean, the two best strokes I've played lately have been against Solana and against my son Jake, who actually hits the ball like a real person. And then you get the old people like us confounding the crap out of that. This is true. Solana was a lot more professional. My son, at least five times during a match when we play, will just turn to me, and I'm his dad, and he'll go, "That's not tennis." And then just turn and walk away in a huff. Yeah.
Really?
And it's really not. But it wins.
But wait, what kind of shots are you hitting?
You know what? You hit a lot of slices when you clearly should be returning the topspin mm-hmm. with the topspin, but eventually it reaches a point. It reached a point when I was playing my son. We were playing at hard court. He was serving, and it was hurting my hand. So I realized I'm not returning his power with power, so you have to throw him off a little bit. You have to be the wily old guy.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. As long as you're getting it over the net.
And that's why I stay away from basketball. My son asked me yesterday, he goes, "When's the last time you shot a basketball?" And I said, "I can't remember," because unlike in tennis, when you play old man tennis, it's kind of cool. It's like, wow, that's kind of neat what he does. I don't want to be the guy out there like I remember my dad was with the two-hand shot. Oh, let me show you how it's done here. So I'll see you on the tennis court.
So you don't pull up to the park and then tell the kids who are playing basketball, "Hold on a second." Then you do a hook shot, and then all of a sudden you're going to...
And get back in the car and leave.
Yeah, and be like, that's how it's done.
And I got to tell you, there's actually a former trainer of the Heat once told me, he says, never shoot a ball during Heat practice. Understand? And you're here to do another thing. Don't be a pretender mm-hmm. to being something else. So that's what I've always been. When I'm at practice pregame, the ball rolls to me. I just roll it out to someone else. I'm there to hold the pen and the pad and the tape recorder. You guys can shoot the ball.
All right. Well, Solana and I are going to have to deal with this off the air. But when we come back, Ira, speaking of basketball, that's a nice segue. Game two is in the books. Excuse me, I'm confusing my series.
It's been so long between games.
Game two is in the books. We're going to talk about what we saw last night between the Warriors and Raptors next here on QAM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.